investors. I'm David Rothberg. With me this morning is Al Friedberg of the Friedberg Global Macro Hedge Fund. Today is Friday, July the 30th. I welcome you to our quarterly conference call. First of all, let me welcome you, Al. How are you doing?
Okay, David. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, we're going to follow our normal format. I'm going to put a number of questions to Albert, and then we're going to respond to questions that are sent to us by listeners. If you have a question and you'd like to, if you have time to respond to it, please, we will. Please send that question to erott@niagaracapital.ca, E-R-O-T-T at niagaracapital.ca. We'll try and limit the call to about 40 minutes and let everybody get back to work today. Without any further ado, let's get started. Al, you had a wonderful first quarter, and just when we were about to clap our hands, we began a month that turned out to be the worst month in the history of the fund since we started in 2001. You have a history of being too early. You also have a history of being very resolute in your views. Can you talk about the cause of, I guess, of the more recent history rather than the first quarter?
Right. Okay. Good morning, everyone. So what I want to address actually three issues. I want to address the recent drawdown. I want to address then the scenario that we still maintain, and I want to address then the positions that we have. So let me start with actually the drawdown. And for those who don't know hedge fund lingo, drawdown means losses. I have explained very often that one of the ways, the way we control risk is primarily via leverage. We estimate the amount of exposure that will cause a certain maximum drawdown, let's say, of no more than 4% over 2 days. And that's the position that we take, and that's the amount of leverage that we take on. The two-day limit, the two-day horizon, it gives us sufficient time to catch our breath if something really unexpected happens. What this risk control method does not do is it does not control the cumulative losses that one can have. For instance, we can actually lose 1 or 2% a day or 0.5% a day for a long period of time, and cumulatively this can become like a 20% or anything else. So it does not control that. We do not have a stop loss. We found over the years that that does not suit us well, does not do well for us. And we tend to be a bit more stubborn with our positions, and this method allows us to do that. Again, leverage is the key that we use for risk control. Now, what happens then is, if you look at it from, if you look at it cumulatively, you ask yourself a question, well, so then where do you stop? And the answer is, we stop where the market continues to, in a way that is contrary to our expectations. And it does that for some time. And it gives us some reason, in addition to acting differently, it gives us some reason to believe that our scenario has changed. When it does that, we will have those positions that cause us the problem. At worst, what happens is if we can't find a reason and we don't understand what's happening, and that can happen too, we'll just close out the position without, we'll just close out the position. So the best way of closing it out is if we can justify why something is happening. And the worst is, of course, when we say, well, you know, we've lost sufficient money, we've lost enough money, and we'll just close out the position regardless. The last 3 weeks, which has been a very severe drawdown and a very quick drawdown, was one in which we looked for reasons why this was happening and found a small amount of them, a small justification, but only a very small justification, and finally decided to exit some of the positions. Primarily the short side of the equity markets. I mean, that was the main thing, our short side in China, our short side in the UK, and in the US. The justification for this move, of course, I think everybody can see. Much better than expected earnings. And a better feeling that came out of Europe, not so much because of the bank stress test was so successful, but because we were getting substantially better or better than expected economic news out of Europe. And again, in particular, out of Germany. Germany seems to be the motor, and the big motor in Europe. And to find reasons for that, we found some reasons for that. The economy is very export-driven, and Asia has been still very strong. And so we find that Germany has been able to exploit that. And so Europe has been lifted. Germany has been lifted by the still ongoing strength in Asia. So, again, better earnings reports in the U.S., better than expected anyway, and better than expected economic news in Europe. So that gave the market some a substantial lift, a quick and substantial lift, and it forced us to close out some of the losing positions. Now the question that we have to address ourselves is, after having taken this drawdown, which is, I think, somewhere around 18%, and it leaves us still with a profit for the year, but a small profit for the year, we have to ask ourselves whether there is a real substantive change in the picture, or whether we continue to believe in the same scenario that we had till now. And in my opinion, we're still looking at a very strong, very severe deflationary a picture. And the reason we have this deflationary condition is because we have very low or almost non-existent money growth in the U.S., in Europe, and in Japan. And this very, very low money growth, or practically unchanged money growth for the past year, does not provide enough funding for the developed markets to take off into a sustained recovery, into a sustained boom. There's not exactly the same that's happening in the emerging markets. I mentioned before that Asia was still strong, and it is still strong, and parts of Latin America are strong. I believe that it's that residual strength in the global economy that is still providing some support to the developed markets. However, almost all the emerging markets that are booming have taken steps to restrain the boom. So we have India and Korea and Brazil and Israel and Malaysia and a few other countries have raised their interest rates a number of times, not just once, and are likely to continue to raise interest rates. As an example, India, which is one of the strongest and fastest economies, growing at something like 8-9% a year, has an inflation rate, as a current inflation rate, of 11% a year. While their money rates are still around 6%, they're still catching up. And so it's likely that they will continue to raise those rates and lower the boom. This will happen in the emerging markets. This is happening in the emerging markets. So for the next few months, we will see more of that. And eventually, the emerging markets will join the developed markets into a more generalized type of deflation. So for us, the big picture, the longer term big picture remains the same. We are mired in a longer term deflation. There's an inability of the central banks to cause money to grow, and that is probably because the the banking system, which is the one that intermediates money growth and credit, is not in the financial condition to do it, is still traumatized by what has happened, is traumatized by government attitudes, it lacks confidence, it is concerned about the new Basel capital requirements. Generally speaking, we are not going to get banks to expand their balance sheets in a significant way until some of these confidence issues are solved. At the same time, we're getting a second wave of weakness in the housing sector in the U.S., and that is likely to continue to affect balance sheets, banking balance sheets. And so, again, all the more reason why the banks are not likely to expand their balance sheets in the near future. An interesting side issue, it seemed to be a harmless or just a minor issue, but it's turned to be a little bit more than a minor issue, is that U.S. weakness, U.S. economic weakness, relative U.S. economic weakness, as we see the numbers are quite weak, has begun to affect the U.S. dollar. And whereas until a few weeks ago the U.S. dollar was strong, we have turned down, and now have turned down in a more persistent way than in the past. Came down for a few days, and it looked like it was just a reaction. But that reaction has turned into a rout. So the U.S. dollar is very weak. That has had also an interesting effect on markets. I have a feeling that some of the strength that we're seeing today in commodity prices, which are trying very hard to they're challenging their previous highs, is the fact that the U.S. dollar is very weak. In addition to that, you've had some problems, drought problems in Russia, which have cut the wheat production by half, which has lifted wheat spectacularly and lifted the entire grain complex. And you had some supply problems in other areas, like tin, which makes the combination makes for stronger, firmer commodity markets. That, too, in my opinion, is deflationary to the extent that the rise in some of the raw material prices will squeeze profit margins and will squeeze incomes in the in the developed markets anyway. So, nor do I think that these factors will contribute to a lasting increase in commodity prices. As an example, and I give an example, we have a commodity manager that is in charge of betting on commodity inflation. The commodity manager may at a very low level of participation. He still has no more. He's still using no more than 50% of his maximum exposure. I think that he does not see. It's clear that he does not see a sustained move in commodity prices. So back to our main scenario, we continue to believe we are in a deflation, in a global deflation. It will become worse over the next few months as the emerging markets try to cool their boom. It will become worse as developed economies implement some very severe fiscal programs. They will get more and more severe, and one of the reasons will be that debt will grow. We won't be able to grow our way out of the debt, and so we'll continue for a while, at least in the early stages, we'll continue to increase taxes in order to make up for it. The solution to the world predicament at the moment, of course, is growth, and there's very little that politicians are doing today around the world that can do something about growth. In fact, if anything, whatever they do is anti-growth. Their declarations, their policies, and the fact that they look to increase taxes rather than to cut spending and rather than to give the private sector more room, they do just the opposite. And this is the reason why I don't believe that we will be able to grow out of the debt problem. So as far as positions are concerned, I believe that equity markets can still, it's still possible markets will, we have more strength actually in Europe than we have in the U.S. These markets are in a little bit better shape since we've seen better breadth in the even in the U.S., better breadth on the upside. We haven't seen a lot of volume. Volume hasn't accompanied the rise, which probably to us indicates that we are still forming a top, a fairly large top. But because of better breadth, it's not impossible that this market will still move a little higher in the next few months. I think that at the outside, the markets will improve until about the third quarter. When the third quarter figures come out, the market should begin to turn down in a more sustained way. Right at this moment, we have a very minor position a minor long position in NASDAQ, but it's just a very small trading position in a way. We have eliminated most of our short exposure in markets, except I think for Brazil, we still have a short position in the options. We continue to hold a long position in gold, and I think that I can talk more about it. I understand from Eddie that somebody has asked the question about gold, but we still are very, very favorably inclined to gold despite the recent reaction. And by the way, that has hurt us too a little bit. As equity markets went up, gold actually went down, and that has hurt us doubly. We have taken a short position U.S. dollar, down long euros, mostly via euros, though we have some yen positions too. I am medium-term bullish on the euro, and I believe that it's not so much the European situation will get better. It's not likely to get better, and I think that it's likely to get worse, actually. Greece and Spain, Portugal, and at least those three, won't come out of their debt mountain. And eventually, they will have to leave the euro, despite the fact that the Europeans have insisted that they will not do that. It's not just a question of debt, but these three countries, at least these three countries, Ireland is actually doing a lot more than they are. At least these three countries have a very unfavorable cost structure. Their unit labor costs have gone up a great deal. Vis-a-vis Germany, these countries' unit labor costs have gone up something like 30 or 40%. So they're not competitive. And they will need to, quote unquote, devalue. Now, it's impossible for them to devalue within the euro system. So they either leave the euro system and go back to their local currencies or accept a very, very pronounced depression where wages, which are normally sticky and normally don't go down, where wages go down this 30%. That's difficult to see that that can happen without major social consequences. So, but for now, the market feels better. The market feels that that this European plan is sustainable. That's the way the market feels. Germany is, as I said before, strong. Its finances are in good shape. It's clearly doing well. The deficit is getting smaller. It's probably carrying with it some other countries in Europe, like Netherlands and Austria. So there's a strong bloc. France and Italy are sort of in the middle. But the way I see it for now, the euro has a good chance of moving toward the higher end of the 130s.
Would you say that would you characterize your long euro position as a trade that is not correlated to this secular view you have of deflation.
Yes. David, that's it. Yeah, let me interrupt you because the answer is yes. It's probably at the moment that is totally uncorrelated to what we think is a general scenario. Here we have a dollar depreciation in the making, and it's something that that eventually we know is going to happen, and it's going to happen in a big way. Europe has a much stronger, let's call it a much firmer, the European Central Bank at least speaks a lot firmer than the Fed. Trichet recently spoke about starting to raise interest rates. And they're far more concerned about the potential for inflation. Now, I myself don't see it simply because their aggregate money supply has not grown at all. M3 has been flat in Europe for over a year. But nevertheless, there is the feeling, and there's a strong German representation in the ECB, there's the feeling that inflation is their main concern, and they're speaking tough. And so here we're speaking simply a question of relative values. And yes, David, it is a position that's uncorrelated to the major picture.
You spoke about, while we're on the topic of currencies, there's a great deal of interest amongst our listeners in our view of currencies generally, and in particular of the yen. We have been long yen in our currency pocket. Our currency pocket has done very well for us, and while it also suffered in July, its losses were an awfully lot less than were our losses in our global opportunities pocket. Can you speak a little bit about the yen, please?
There's very little to say about the yen other than they're caught in a very powerful downdraft and a very powerful deflation. And deflations tend to increase the demand for your own currency, and they're just not able to get out of this. And they're very unhappy with the rising yen, and indicated that they probably will intervene, and I'm sure that they will intervene a number of times. I think there's very little that they can do about it, and I think that their deflation and the fact that they continue to run, although smaller current account surpluses, they continue to run them, guarantees almost that we'll have a higher yen. Don't forget that probably all of their debt really financed because they're running such a positive international position. So there's little risk for the moment that the world market will become nervous about their credit position, their debt position. So my feeling is that the yen should still go higher, but that the euro is undervalued at the moment, and it's likely to be lower than the yen. That's my feeling.
There's a tremendously negative sentiment that prevails, especially amongst institutional money managers. What explains that?
Negative about?
About the yen.
Well, I think that in some way it is justified because, I mean, it's a country that hasn't grown at all, and it's a country that has no growth, that has an aging population, that has very poor economic management, and it makes sense to think of Japan as being a basket case almost. I think that I attribute that's probably the reason why institutions don't get excited. I should say, by the way, that an interesting phenomenon is taking place in Japan, in the equity market in Japan. And we've had a 20-year bear market. Prices are a quarter of what they were at the high. And for the first time, I noticed the other day that dividend yields in Japan are higher than dividend yields in the U.S., and so we may have touched some sort of bottom or some relative bottom anyway in the Japanese market. If that's the case, you might get even inflows into the country over the next few years to take advantage of a better equity market. So that's an unusual phenomenon. That's the first time the dividend yields in Japan exceed dividend yields in the U.S.
You spoke. You said that being long euro is your one is the one trade that's not correlated to the overall deflationary view. But this is not the case because you do have a long position in gold, and I know that your view on gold is related neither to deflation nor to inflation. But as you said in the past, is really sui generis. I'd like to talk about gold for a second, but before we do, and before we leave behind our talk about deflation, let's spend a little bit of time speaking about bonds, can we? You said you've liquidated your short equity position. Where do you stand in credit?
Yeah, we have not liquidated our bond position. We're still very we still have a very big position in German bonds, and they're trading, you know, somewhere around the 270 yield. We think that the yields there are going much lower. And even in the U.S., we think that the Treasury market, the long end of the market, is still going lower. in this deflationary scenario and credit fears that will continue to recur over the next few years, both of these instruments should do well. More so the German bonds than the U.S. Treasury, simply because the finances of the German government are much better than the U.S. But we have not touched this position, and we believe very strongly in it. And it's one of our core positions.
Do you have any anticipation of playing non-sovereign credits, municipal bonds in the United States, and where do you stand on the sovereign debt crisis in Europe? Has it gone to the back burner? Is it still percolating? You had credit default swaps on Greece, Spain, Hungary. Where do you stand with those today?
No, we still have those positions, and of course they caused some pain in the last few weeks, and that's another reason why we suffered this drawdown. But we maintain those positions because we feel very strongly that it's inevitable that these countries will have to do some type of restructuring to get out of their problem. The credit default swaps have narrowed, but we believe that sometime in the next few weeks we'll be able to even add to that position. We've done a quick calculation back of the envelope. We think that what we have today, the very worst that can happen to us with the position that we have today is over the next 3 years is a 3% drawdown. So that's very moderate, and we like to increase that. And we're looking for an opportunity to increase that. Now, as far as credit, as you know, David, I'm very, very concerned about credits. I think going forward, that's the most treacherous area of all. In fact, I think credit is a more treacherous area even than the equity market. Simply because the equity markets, you can find companies very well financed with a lot of cash, good cash flow, good balance sheets. And so in the long run, and of course protected against future inflation. So you probably will do better with equities than you will do with credit. Credit is going to become a major, major headache in the next few years. Again,
do you anticipate expanding the long positions you have in credit default swaps into other credit areas?
No, and the main reason is not because I don't want to. I think that I do, and there's some very interesting areas, but there's very little liquidity, and we try to keep the fund very liquid and in markets that are easy to get out. Easy to exit. And for now, the best markets in that respect are the credit swaps in European countries. There's good markets for them. There's a relatively narrow spread between bid and ask, relatively narrow, as best as we can hope. And so that's where we're going to be. We are looking with interest. We are watching with interest what happens in the exchanges. In the clearinghouses, the Chicago Merck and the ICE, and if some of the CDS or individual CDS corporate city assets trade there, and we are convinced that the margins are reasonable, and they protect the counterparties properly, and liquidity, trading liquidity is good. We will get involved in those too.
Okay, let's turn our attention to gold for a bit, if we could, Al. You, as I say, you've said that gold is sui generis since the beginning of July. There's been a lot of technical degradation of the gold market. Consensus was very, very high. The bullish opinion was very high at the end of June. The market, from a technical perspective, has broken some major trend lines. Fundamentally, can you tell us where you stand with gold, please?
Yeah. You know, the market attracts visitors, unwanted visitors, along the way. It's like a long journey, and along the way, people come in there, and they're not really wanted. People who, let's say, use gold because they're afraid that the world will disappear. Or people, and then they have to get off because the world is not disappearing. Or people who come in and go on the hitch a ride because they think that inflation is going to explode. And then they find out that rather than inflation, we may have a deflation problem. So they get off. And then there's other visitors that come in thinking that that deflation is good for gold or bad for gold, whatever. There's all kinds of people that come in and out of this train ride. And every time they get on, they create a bump, and every time they get off, they create a bit of a drop. None of these things really are what's driving this gold market higher. What's driving the gold market higher is the fear is the fact that gold is probably is re-entering the official market. It's re-entering the central bank reserve sector, and there's a long way to go. Europe has gold reserves probably equal to about 50% of their total holdings. The United States still holds a very substantial chunk of gold, but if you look at the Asian countries, they have very limited amount of gold. Very, very, very limited. Maybe 1-2% exposure in some cases, even less. So we think that will change in the next few years, and gold will start going into those central bank reserves. It is to accumulate gold here because it's a relatively small market compared to the amount of dollars that they hold. But as the market rises, and volume increases, and the price itself makes the market larger. We'll see more and more central banks going in. It is basically a reaction to deteriorating credit quality. If you look at the sovereign funds and other central banks, they are concerned, and they should be concerned, and they will become increasingly concerned with the fact that they can't hold credit instruments without running very large default risk. And gold is an easy asset to buy, easy to store. It's a lot easier than buying wheat or buying corn. And I believe that's what's driving the market higher. That's behind this rise for the past few years. It will continue to be there, regardless of the temporary setbacks. And it's true that when the prospects of inflation disappear, the market gets a bit of a drop, and that's happened in the past few months. Or when there is a better feeling in about the world economy after the stress test, people felt that things have become horizon has become a little bit clearer. It's true that affects the market, but that the reason why it affects the market is only because there's some unwanted visitors who now have to get off. But it's not really affecting the fundamentals of this market. And if you look at the persistent, relentless accumulation of gold in the ETFs, This is not a passing phenomenon. This is not a passing bubble. It will become a bubble, yes, but it's far from it. It's persistent accumulation of gold going to the hands of people who believe that they can trust credit going forward. There's very little with credit going forward. So really, AAA credit, like government credit, and gold are the two best assets to hold in this kind of an environment.
Okay, thank you. Let's, as we're moving here close to the 40-minute timeline that we try and set on the calls, let's try and summarize a bit. But before we do, let's speak a little bit about a risk management issue. If you have this secular view that we are in a deflationary environment and your single uncorrelated trade to that, other than gold, which is, as you say, stands apart, is to be long euros. Are you managing risk, as you said at the outset, by deleveraging the fund? Is that your primary control now to cope with what may happen between now and the time when you see these views of yours start to express themselves or make themselves manifest?
Not really. We deleveraged the fund maybe 6-9 months ago, and we are holding a substantial amount of powder. We have a lot of reserves. We actually have a lot of reserves. We can move in any direction we want, but it hasn't changed in the past 6 or 9 months. Again, the only control that we use over the only that we have is this idea of restricting leverage to something that will create or something that will not create a loss of more than a certain amount over a short period of time. So we're not deleveraging. We have deleveraged. And we're not changing.
Deleveraging further?
We're not deleveraging further, no.
I see. Okay, thank you.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry I've interrupted you there. Continue that thought.
No, that's it. I don't see. We have not really changed in any way. I think that by the same reason that we can rise quickly and gain and make some very strong gains like we did in the month of June, we can also lose very quickly. You can't get substantial upside without accepting some substantial risks. But I think that from a leverage point of view, I think we are where we should be, in the right place.
Okay. Thank you. So to summarize, and please correct me if I misrepresent you, we believe, or the fund you believe that deflation remains the single most significant factor, the single most significant macro theme during the month of July, and perhaps going forward for several months, this theme has been weakened by better corporate earnings, maybe ongoing strength in equity markets. Temporarily, but it is temporary, and that over the long run, the world suffers from an absence of growth, and that weakness in growth will be augmented by slowing growth in the one place that's managed to generate it other than Germany, and that is in Asia. The decline in Asia stemming likely from in rates will further weaken the West, in particular, and Germany, the one driving force in Europe. You're still positioned from a deflationary point of view by being long sovereign credit, bonds and bunds. You no longer have any significant equity short positions. You're modestly long NASDAQ. your long euro, you have some long positions in yen, and your major position is gold. And as far as credit goes, you still have a bet against sovereign debt default in the weaker countries in Europe via credit default swaps.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, you summarized it well.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time today, Al. We wish you the best going forward, and we extend our sympathies on July. We hope for July. We hope things get better, and we trust it's Joe.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.